Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we'll be getting a tour of the origins of everything. We'll find out why people kiss, who invented karaoke, and then unfortunately for him didn't make a dime off it, and which popular soft drink is an anagram for Episcopo. Maybe that'll keep you busy for a while. Well, we'll be talking this hour with Will Pearson, co-founder and editor of Mental Floss magazine, which just released the book In the Beginning, From Big Hair to the Big Bang. Mental Floss presents a mouth-watering guide to the origins of everything. It's Valentine's Day, February 14th, and we are in the midst of our winter pledge drive. And it is, of course, the loveliest of all days, the perfect day to show your love to Wisconsin Public Radio by becoming a member. Pledging is easy. It just takes a couple of minutes, and you'll feel very good afterwards, especially when you listen to the radio and feel that sense of ownership. Our goal this hour is $6,000, and your pledge at any amount is our bread and butter. It's what sustains Wisconsin Public Radio and keeps us healthy. The number to call to become a member, 1-800-383-9772. And I'm joined now in the studio by my friend and colleague Steve Paulson from To the Best of Our Knowledge. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Veronica. And we have a special incentive to try to sweeten the deal here, a special reason for you to call in on this Valentine's Day, a chocolate event, which we think will knock your socks off. So we'll tell you about that as the hour goes along. A pledge at any level would be wonderful. We need to hear from you to try to reach that goal of $6,000. The number to call, 800-383-9772. And you can also pledge online at WPR.org. A pledge of any level would be wonderful. Whatever you pledge is the right amount. You know what Wisconsin Public Radio is worth to you. It could be a $60 pledge. Could be a $120 pledge, or it could be a $600 pledge, which will give you a ticket to all things chocolate, a chocolate extravaganza that will happen here in late April.
Well, just to tell you a little bit more about this chocolate event, it really is an event in the biggest sense of the word. We're going to be having three of Madison's premier chocolatiers, Gail Ambrosius, David Bacco of Cocoli Co., and Marcus Candinas in to give us a little sampling of their wares, a delicious sampling, I'm sure, and at the same time, we'll be going on to interview them and really getting in-depth about chocolate, learning about chocolate, going beyond just the tasting of chocolate, so we'll be appreciating it all the more. And then we'll be putting together a little piece of the interview we've just heard. Joining us in Buck Studio for this great big event, we'll be talking to Jim Fleming will be there, and Steve Paulson and Strange Champs, three interviewers on To the Best of Our Knowledge. I will be there as well to sample some chocolate and learn about chocolate, and I'm hoping you'll be there too. It'll be a great thing to sample together. It is a partnership at Wisconsin Public Radio, and as long as we're sharing, why not share the chocolate and the love as well? So why not become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio today? When you do pledge at the $600 level, we will send you out one ticket to that event. 1-800-383-9772 is the number to call, 1-800-383-9772, or online, WPR.org.
And when you buy a ticket to this All Things Chocolate event, you will be not only sampling wonderful chocolates and seeing how radio is put together, most importantly, you'll be helping to support Wisconsin Public Radio. You will help us towards that goal of $6,000 towards the hour. And we need to hear from you right now. We don't do this very often. These pledge drives, we're nearing the end of the winter pledge drive, and we need to reach our goals. So the number to call is 800-383-9772. You can also pledge online at WPR.org.
And, of course, Kathleen Dunn is normally the voice who would be talking to you right now at this time. I know she would love to be here, but I hope that you will step up and support her program and the programming she and Rhonda Fanning and Carmen Jackson work so hard to bring you year-round, the best and the brightest, and radio that's really transformational. Radio does have the power to transform, and lots of times you hear something on Wisconsin Public Radio that just stops you in your tracks, whether it's Alan Alda, who has been a guest on Kathleen's program, or Madeline Albright, like we heard a couple of days ago, whether it is Alice Walker or Maya Angelou. Those people, sometimes the wisdom and just the inspiration you get from public radio is huge, and it's hard to put a price price tag on it, but we're asking you to do it this hour so you can help support Wisconsin Public Radio. So say thank you to Kathleen and to Rhonda and to Carmen, and do support Wisconsin Public Radio and the programming this hour at 1-800-383-9772. It just takes a few minutes of your time.
And one way to think about the value of Wisconsin Public Radio is imagine what your life would be like if suddenly there was no public radio that you could listen to. It was just gone. You know, all you could hear would be commercial radio stations, and just public radio had vanished. What would be missing in your life? I think that's a good way to think about what this is worth. And so give us a call. Show your support. The number to call is 800-383-9772. Also, you can pledge online at WPR.org. Do contact us right now.
1-800-383-9772 is that number to call to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. We also welcome your pledges online. Save a little bit of paper there by going online to WPR.org. And Steve, thank you for coming in, and we'll be talking with you a bit more later.
Okay.
Steve Paulson from To the Best of Our Knowledge. And we'll be talking now with Will Pearson, co-founder and editor of Mental Floss magazine, which just released the book In the Beginning, From Big Hair to the Big Bang. Mental Floss presents a mouthwatering guide to the origins of everything. And if you do need a little bit extra incentive to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, we will be giving out the book as a thank you gift when you pledge at $120. It's a fascinating book that you can read a little bit of a time, and it'll give you a dinner conversation or cocktail party conversation for a long time to come. So that's a pledge at the $120 level at 1-800-383-9772. And Will Pearson, thanks so much for taking the time to talk this morning.
Oh, thanks for having me on your show.
Well, your book, it's broken down into categories, and every page has got lots of juicy stories about how things began. I really couldn't stop reading it last night. Can you give us an idea of the range of subjects that you cover here?
Well, you know, the idea for this book actually came from many of our readers. We of course work for Mental Floss magazine, and we'll have questions from our readers on a regular basis. And we found we were often getting questions about the origins of various things. It may have been the origins of brand names. It may have been the origins of characters in pop culture. It may have been the origins of things within religion or science or government, fun and games. You know, there are so many different things out there, and we are curious about where they all came from. And so we decided to do a book focusing on exactly that.
So let's start with one of your favorites. Tell us about one that you had to dig up.
Well, you know, actually, this sounds strange, but sometimes my favorites are the ones where the origins are actually debatable, because some of them are a little more confusing than others. Just for example, Pepsi Cola. You'd think this would be a pretty easy one. It's not that old of a brand name. And so we did our digging and tried to find, you know, what was the true origin of this name. What we do know is it started its life as Brad's Drink in a North Carolina pharmacy, named after the pharmacist there. What's unclear is where the name Pepsi came from. Now, some people think it's because the drink was originally marketed as a cure for stomach ache, or what's known as dyspepsia. But more interesting, perhaps, is to take notice of the church across the street from the original drugstore. And it was an Episcopal church. And they like to point out that the word Episcopal is an anagram for Pepsi Cola. So perhaps that's where the name came from. However, being a Mental Floss staff member, we did a little bit of extra research, and we point out that Britney Spears is an anagram for Presbyterian, so we're inclined to discount this whole theory altogether.
So you don't really think that Episcopalians drink more Pepsi than they do Coke?
I don't think so. I don't know. But many of them claim that is the origin of the name, but it is one of those that is still unknown.
And just in case we were inclined to give too much weight to the anagram theory there, you do point out in the book that Britney Spears is an anagram of Presbyterians.
Exactly, exactly.
Well, tell me about some Valentine's Day-related things. You've got some interesting stories there about the origins of Valentine's Day and the heart and the kiss. Tell us about some of the sweeter things that began.
We certainly do. You know, many people have asked us about these as well, and it may be, you know, something like French kissing, for example. And, you know, the French are responsible for a lot of wonderful things, but this one is actually one that they did not start, and the old slip of the tongue isn't from France at all. It's actually a slur against the nation. It became popular in the 1920s, and it really gained a foothold among the English, who thought that the French were just the kind of people who would go around sticking their tongues in places where they didn't belong. And so they were actually the one that started using the term French kiss. And actually, the French language, there's no such thing as a French kiss, but what they would call it is soul kissing. So we dug a little deeper to try to find out where it actually, you know, would have come from. And many of us think that the actual act came from India, where the Kama Sutra refers to at least 250 different ways to kiss your lover. So that's probably where it originated.
Well, you've said the English also use the word French kiss. Is it spread beyond America and England?
You know, I don't know that it's popularly used beyond those that are speaking the English language. So I think that most people refer to it as that. But yeah, I do think, you know, there are others that refer to it, but it's mainly an English language thing.
Well, what about just regular kissing? Because I can see why this would be a really interesting one to research. When you look at kissing, if you really take a step back and look at what we're doing there, you have to admit it's a little weird.
It's a little weird. It's very strange. And, you know, this is one that we can look at, you know, beyond just humans and looking at the kind of the animal kingdom as a whole. And there are many theories as to the origins of kissing. The one that I think is perhaps the sweetest, maybe, is the idea that, you know, mothers, when they were feeding their children, or their babies, if you can think about young birds, perhaps, and the mothers might have been chewing up their food for them and passing it on mouth to mouth to their child. And in this case, if they didn't always have food, it might have still been a way to provide some comfort to them to put their mouths together. And so it did become something over time that was a way to express love or care for another person, to put your mouth up against their mouth. So that's perhaps my favorite of the theories out there.
And also, you do make the point that it does stem from, or at least lust, the I don't know if you call it an emotion, but it comes from the reptilian part of the brain, this ancient part of the brain. So maybe you have to go back and look at a lizard's flicking tongue.
That's exactly right. That maybe not quite as appealing or romantic as we might think, but yeah, it was very fun to dig back into some of the things like this.
Well, we do have open lines this hour for you to call in with your questions for Will Pearson. If you have a question about the origin of something, where it came from, this is the guy to ask. He is co-founder and editor of Mental Floss magazine, which just released the book In the Beginning, From Big Hair to the Big Bang. Mental Floss presents a mouthwatering guide to the origins of everything. So to call in with your questions for Will Pearson, you can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up after 11 o'clock today, join us to talk with Larry Mueller. Has it been a long, cold, and drafty winter at your house? Well, after 11, Larry Mueller calls upon Ken Adams of Madison and John Freiberger of Fitchburg for advice on warming up your abode. That's coming up after 11 o'clock. I'm Veronica Rickert. Joining you today, I'm in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we talk about the origins of everything with Will Pearson, co-founder and editor of Mental Floss magazine, which just released the book In the Beginning. And Will Pearson, a sad story that comes to light in your book, A Happy Invention, A Sad Guy, the fellow who invented karaoke. Tell us about him.
Yeah, you'd think you shouldn't feel too bad for the guy that invented karaoke, because it was certainly a fad that swept the nation, actually still very popular today. Maybe hard to call it a fad, but the person who created it actually was not a very good musician at all. Maybe that's not a surprise to many. But his name was Desake Inoue, and actually he was part of a Hawaiian band. Unfortunately, his bandmates quickly realized his musical limitations, and so he became the band's manager, but still served as an occasional drummer for other groups, particularly on amateur nights, playing backup for various people. But there was one performance where a friend of his had asked him to come accompany him playing the drums, and he couldn't make it to the show. And so he decided to record his drum playing and send it along with him and said, you know, when you start your performance, just hit play and you'll have the drums behind you. And he realized he was onto something, that, you know what, we could create music, put it on tapes, without the singing and allow people to sing along with it, and he created the first karaoke machine. Now, why we feel sorry for poor Daisuke is because he forgot to patent his invention. So the millions and millions of people who have participated in karaoke nights over the years could have been contributing many, many dollars to him over the years, but unfortunately, he did forget to patent his invention and hasn't made a dime off of it.
He's kind of got to feel like Pete Best, the guy who messed up his stint with the Beatles.
Exactly. Yeah, I would put that up there with that. So.
Do we know what became of him?
I was trying to think of exactly what became of him, but no, I don't. I think he lived an okay life and continued to perform and continued to play the drums, but he probably didn't have quite as much money as he would have. So.
Well, I want to go to the phones now. We have Jim calling from Racine. And by the way, there is an open line for you right now at 1-800-642-1234, the number to call to talk to Will Pearson about the origins of everything. 1-800-642-1234. And here is Jim calling from Racine. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I just wondered, the book sounds fascinating, but I wondered, how did they come up with the magazine called Mental Floss? How'd that get started?
Thanks for the call, Jim.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. The magazine Mental Floss, we actually started about 6 years ago, and there were two of us that were students at Duke together, and it was during the middle of the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire craze, and we were sitting around talking one night about the fact that people like to feel smart, you know, people like to feel well-educated, but that most textbooks aren't exactly what we would consider entertaining, and so we decided to start a magazine that would deliver, you know, interesting information, but in an entertaining format. And being naive college students at the time, we somehow thought we were qualified to start a magazine. And fortunately, we got really lucky, and the audience out there seemed very receptive and have enjoyed the magazine since then. And so we've had a blast doing it. But yeah, that's our whole mission, is to blur those lines between education and entertainment and continue teaching those lifelong learners everything they'd love to know.
Well, Will Pearson, you pointed out that your magazine is successful in part because people like to feel smart, and you may have noticed that we are in the midst of our winter membership drive here at Wisconsin Public Radio, and we are giving away your book as a thank you gift for a pledge of $120. Can you tell me, in terms of feeling smart, this book has to provide lots of opportunities to feel smart over the years. Is this book especially useful in terms of impressing people and cocktail party conversation and maybe in just learning stuff?
Well, the kind of information that we share is, you know, these kinds of things do come up in conversation, and that's part of the fun in all of this. You know, as we talked about before, with it being Valentine's Day, to have the opportunity to know, you know, the origins of kissing or French kissing or the origins of Valentine's Day or many other things that are out there that may come up just in general conversation. And so that is part of the fun for all of us, is that, you know, we are providing interesting information for our readers, and at the same time, we feel smarter ourselves. It's a very selfish endeavor. We get to research all of the things we've always wanted to know about, you know, whether, again, in this case, whether it's the origin of various brand names, the origin of toys like the Barbie doll, the origin of movies like E.T., for example. It just feels really good to know all of these things.
Well, let's go back to the phones and take a call from Christy in Madison. Hi, Christy. You're on the air.
Hi. I was curious. I read a book once that told about marriage rituals and how they started. But, a book is a book, and you never know. So if you can confirm for me why there are, what is the true ordination of the maid of honor and the best man, and what is the origin of a ring? And also, why did diamonds become so popular? And I can take all this off the air.
Thanks a lot, Christy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Actually, this is something that we cover in the book, and I think I can remember all of the stories, even though there are many, many stories that we cover in the book. But it's actually very fascinating to think about the origins of some of these things. The bridesmaids, for example, I think was mentioned. In ancient Egypt, bridesmaids were actually recruited to confuse evil spirits who might be attempting to curse the bride. So all the female members of the wedding party dressed alike, again, with the idea that if an evil spirit came along, they wouldn't exactly know who the bride was, maybe at first glance. So it was in an effort to do that. Now, the groomsmen, on the other hand, served a very different and possibly more practical function. and that was to ward off the bride's family members. You know, apparently what the best man was best at was fighting. So if, you know, if the bride's family was opposing this marriage, there would be the wedding party, or there would be the groomsmen to fight any of them off. So it's a very interesting thing to be to learn all of these things. Now, the ring, for example, goes back many, many years, back as early as what we found as 2800 BCE. The Egyptians, you know, subscribed to many of the same symbols that we do today. And so there's this symbol of eternity that had no end, the ring, you know, or the circle. And so it was used as a symbol. You know, obviously you would put the ring on your finger, and it was one of the ways to, you know, remind yourself of this eternal bond. As far as diamonds, you know, it was pretty interesting to learn about some of this that, you know, De Beers and some of the others. It was actually the work of an ad agency which conducted an enormous number of surveys starting in 1938 before it concluded, you know, that it can convince millions of people that true romance called for a diamond. So this is one of those things where it actually had to do with an ad agency trying to convince people that this was the way to show real love, and it caught on in that way. So it was a lot of fun doing the research on many of the origins here.
So an ad agency, that's interesting.
Yes, yeah.
Do you remember what the ad said?
I was trying to remember with exactly what the ad said, and I was blanking on that, but it was one of those, I was trying to remember it, but yeah, it's amazing the power of some of the ad agencies that can convince us over time. We actually recently did a story and an issue of the magazine about Eddie Bernays and his efforts to do surveys across America. This is on a very different topic, but the power of ad agencies that Bernays actually convinced doctors across America after doing many surveys that it was very healthy to start the day with a more hearty breakfast. So he was really the person responsible for convincing America to eat bacon for breakfast, a very healthy thing, right? So
wow.
It's pretty interesting to learn the stories. Many of these things that we kind of do as habit or as practice, whether it be getting a diamond for a wedding or, you know, certain dietary practices or some of these things, we may have been convinced by an ad agency or a marketing agency behind the scenes.
Well, the breakfast thing is really interesting because if you leave the United States, it seems that almost nobody else has quite the evolved concept of breakfast that we have with the pancakes and the bacon and the eggs. I was just in New Zealand a couple of months ago, and we would try to order our eggs scrambled there, and they said, oh, you must be American. Only Americans want to order their eggs in different ways. So
exactly.
It was interesting.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. And you know, growing up, I grew up in the South, and breakfast is a huge meal there, obviously, and even for dinner many times, it's a common practice to have breakfast for dinner with the bacon and eggs and everything else that comes along with it.
So moving over to the field of science, I guess this guy kind of crosses the divide between popular culture and science. He's got a tie to Wonder Woman as well, but tell us about where the lie detector came from.
Well, you know, William Marston was actually one of the key players. He was a psychologist in popularizing the role of the lie detector. And he was actually approached by the U.S. government to help during World War I to come up with a way to make sure prisoners of war told the truth. And so basing his research on some earlier, you know, players that had tried to perfect the lie detector, he would measure or test his subjects' blood pressure during their interviews, and depending on the fluctuations, they would decide whether the prisoner of war or the person taking the lie detector test was telling the truth. What's interesting, though, in doing a lot of this research is that we did find on many occasions that you would run across the same name twice, and many times in very different fields. So, as I mentioned, Marston was a psychologist. Well, he was also the creator of Wonder Woman. And we thought this was very exciting when we first started doing the digging, but we were actually a little disappointed to learn that Marston's idea of Wonder Woman was not exactly what we think of it today. You know, we look at Wonder Woman and think of her maybe as this, you know, great, active, feminist character. But unfortunately, the way he saw her is he was trying to send the message to little girls across America that you could be active and you could do lots of fun things, but you could also be kind of passive or submissive at the same time. So that was his original idea with Wonder Woman.
That's not what I think of when I think of the TV show anyway.
Not at all.
Linda
so
Carter
I think it
was
kind of,
a tough chick.
Exactly. I think it kind of took a turn for the better, in my opinion. But yeah, that wasn't his original goal with Wonder Woman.
And as far as the lie detector goes, that did take off to a certain extent. And if you mention the polygraph, it does have a certain sort of cachet when you're dealing with public popular opinion. But as far as courts go, it really didn't cut the mustard, huh?
No, it really didn't. And actually, even as early as 1923, in the case of Frye versus the United States, the court decided that the test could not really be considered reliable. And over the years, there have been many times that people have tried to reintroduce it into the courts or to be used again. But no, there's really never been a lie detector test that the courts allowed to be used in these cases.
Well, going back to Wonder Woman and another popular doll that sort of has a less than ideal beginning, tell us about Barbie. There's a bit of a tawdry story here.
Yeah, I have to admit, this one really surprised me. You know, when Barbie had her coming out party at the Toy Fair in 1959, she was teenage, scantily clad, as we all know, and about as far from the traditional baby doll as she could be. And mothers across the country were mortified by this doll. But they would have even been more so had they known the doll's history. So you've got the founders of Mattel, Ruth and Elliot Handler, that were traveling across the globe looking at other dolls, trying to get ideas for something that they could create. And they were on a trip to Switzerland, and they discovered a doll named Lily. Now, Lily wasn't meant for kids at all. She was actually created by the German porn industry, and the target audience was obviously adult men. And so Barbie was a slightly gentler creation whose clothes, the shoes and the car and the dream house and everything else made the doll. But in fact, it was modeled after this doll, Lily, so pretty different.
You know, you wonder, that didn't really get out and change how people thought about Barbie.
It really didn't, and I think that's something that, you know, today maybe people would have been all over that as far as the origins of that, but I guess nobody really knew early on, and it was such a, you know, I mean, again, even without that knowledge, though, there was that degree of uproar from certain mothers around the country because this was a very different doll than the dolls they had been looking at in the past, but somehow it took the country by storm and became a big success.
We're talking with Will Pearson this hour, co-founder and editor of Mental Floss magazine, which just released the book In the Beginning. From Big Hair to the Big Bang, Mental Floss presents a mouthwatering guide to the origins of everything. And you can quiz Will Pearson about the origins of something you're particularly interested in by calling us at 1-800-642-1234. We have an open line for you right now at 1-800-642-1234. And Will Pearson, we're talking Valentine's Day, of course, because it is Valentine's Day, and we've already talked about kissing, but how about the day itself? I think that I can remember back in school days hearing about St. Valentine. Is that still the prevailing theory?
Well, you know, and what we found in doing the research on this one was a little more confusing than others, because when we say St. Valentine, there's actually multiple people we could be referring to. Now, according to most sources, the original Valentine's Day was named after two men, not two men in love with each other, but they were both Christian saints martyred on or around February 14th. One was Valentine of Rome, the other one was Valentine of Terni. But as we were digging a little deeper, we found that there's a completely different Valentine, Valentinius of Alexandria, who was a former candidate for Bishop of Rome. And he and his many teachings placed high importance on the act of sex. And this was something that, of course, among married couples. And as for the timing, February had been a traditional time for expressing love for centuries among the pagans. And so the Catholic Church basically just co-opted this holiday in the middle of the month. So it's probably more Valentinius of Alexandria than the others, but it was a little more foggy than some of the other origins we researched.
That is interesting. Yeah, we didn't learn that one in grade school.
No, we didn't.
Well, how about the dishwasher? This is one that surprised me a bit. I guess I sort of thought a corporation would have invented the dishwasher, but it was actually a single woman.
Well, it was, and one that you wouldn't have expected. You know, it was hard to feel sorry for Josephine Cochran, given the problems that most people of her day faced with poverty and backbreaking work schedules and poor health. But Josephine, on the other hand, had the classic vexing issue of the very rich, and that it was hard to find good help. She was a very wealthy socialite, and the biggest problem that she had is that her helpers continued to break her very fine china dishes, and she couldn't find those who would handle it to her satisfaction. And so she decided to take this problem in her own hands, not by washing the dishes with her hands exactly, but by going out in the woodshed behind her house. She would work for many, many hours on end and came up with a contraption that was the first dishwasher. Now, what's been interesting in going back and looking at a lot of this is that when you look at the features of that first dishwasher, many of them are very similar to what you would find today with the wires at the base that stick up that you could put the plates or dishes in, and the water that would be heated down below and squirted up to clean the dishes. So many of those features were there. Now, what we found interesting in doing a lot of this research, though, was that even though she had created a very easy way or a much easier way to wash these dishes, the idea didn't catch on for many years, because as they were doing surveys among women at the time, they actually found, at least this is what they claimed, that women enjoyed washing the dishes. And so it took a few decades for this to catch on. I have a hard time believing that, but that was what was claimed.
Well, I had said a little thank you to Josephine last night myself as I loaded my dishes. I have to say, of all the appliances, okay, maybe the washing machine and the dryer, but of all the appliances I have, I am definitely the most grateful for the dishwasher.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah, yeah, especially if you've lived a few years without one, you certainly appreciate it. Now, Josephine's her company, she died in 1913, but her company later became known as KitchenAid, which obviously we have all heard of.
Mm, that's a pretty popular brand, too. Mm-hmm. Okay, on to Craig in Madison. Hi, Craig. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. My question kind of relates to your other comment about the power of advertising. I had heard that the origin of the prohibition on marijuana in this country related to advertising campaigns by the competitors with hemp rope, synthetic rope makers like DuPont Corporation, spreading rumors and things about the power of marijuana to corrupt the mind. And that, do you have any ideas about that?
You know, Craig, I have heard some of those same stories. I wouldn't feel comfortable verifying any of them because we didn't include that in this book. But I have heard some of those things, but we haven't done detailed research on that. So that is the kind of thing you do find happening, when one industry is trying to keep another industry down, perhaps, and in this case, it's obviously a bit tricky, but I've heard some of those stories, but I can't verify any of that.
Well, thank you for that call, Craig, and we'll be taking more of your calls in just a moment after we take a quick break. We are talking this hour with Will Pearson, co-founder and editor of Mental Floss magazine, which just released the book In the Beginning, From Big Hair to the Big Bang. Mental Floss presents a mouthwatering guide to the origins of everything. If you've got a question for Will Pearson, this is a time to call up and ask at 1-800-642-1234. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On Wisconsin Public Radio today at 12:30, join us for Chapter a Day. At 12:30, Jim Fleming reads from American Creation, Triumphs and Tragedies at the Founding of the Republic by Joseph J. Ellis. We're talking about the origins of everything this hour with Will Pearson, co-founder and editor of Mental Floss magazine. Mental Floss just released the book In the Beginning. And Will Pearson, we've got Brad on the line from Avoca. Hi, Brad, you're on the air.
Hi, I was wondering about the origin of a kitchen appliance. I could not live without the microwave oven.
Ah, that's a good one.
Yeah, the microwave oven. This was actually really interesting because as we discovered in doing, the research for many of these products, you find that many of them happen by accident. And this was one of those that in the space industry, they were doing research on microwaves and actually stumbled upon this by accident, where there happened to be somebody who was doing research on something very different, and he had a candy bar in his pants. And as he was doing, research around many of these tools, he felt down in his pocket and realized that the candy bar had melted. And he didn't know exactly, why this had happened. It had not been hot in the room. And then he started to think, wait, we're onto something here, that maybe these microwaves are actually causing this to melt or causing this to heat up. And so it was one of the early realization that something could be done with microwaves to possibly heat food as it was done then. So they actually tested it with popcorn or with corn, and they created the first popcorn in a microwave that they were testing out. So it was very interesting to learn some of these origins. I'm not remembering the name of the actual person who discovered this, but we do cover it in the book. You know, we covered so many things, it's hard to remember every detail, but yes, it was a very interesting story there.
And it's funny, I bet popcorn is still the number one thing people make in the microwave.
I would think so, yeah. I still would think popcorn is the number one thing. So that was one of the funniest things as we, you know, stumbled on it and realized that, you know, that they had used actual corn and put it in there and created the first popcorn by doing this. But I also just thought the idea of that melting candy bar, and as with so many things in science, realizing that they'd stumbled onto something huge without planning to do that at all from the beginning.
Thanks a lot for the call, Brad. And let's take one now from Penny in Holman. Hi, Penny. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
One of the things you didn't mention about Josephine, who developed the dishwasher, was what year was that that she developed it?
What year was it that she developed the dishwasher? She died in 1913. I was trying to remember the exact date that she would have created it. I think it was around 1893, if I'm not mistaken, and that's when she created it. But again, you know, you're talking about it being created and then trying to develop in the early 1900s, but that's when, you know, again, there was some of that resistance to it because, as they claimed, you know, the housewives at the time didn't want the thing because the surveys showed that they actually liked doing the dishes. But yeah, her original creation was in 1893, so way ahead of her time with this idea.
All right, thanks for that call, Penny. And on to John in Dallas. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hi. I've been wondering about the phrase, the golden years, as I get older here and find them not quite as golden as you might think. And wondering if that was an advertising campaign in particular.
That's a great one, yeah. You know, we cover the origins of various phrases. We didn't as much in this book, but we do in the magazine pretty frequently. Unfortunately, I don't actually know the origin of that one, but I love word origins and the origins of various phrases. So thanks for the idea. We'll actually have to tackle that, and I promise we'll do something on that on the website sometime soon with the origin of that phrase.
Can you tell us about one or two phrases that are interesting you did find the origin of?
Well, we've been doing the origin of various things, you know, words that came out of military terminology. For example, the idea of undermine, for example, to undermine someone. The origin of that word actually came from, it was the whole idea of building a tunnel underneath buildings to do things in a secretive way, you know, kind of clandestine operations that may have been done. So actually digging those mines up under something would have been the origin of undermining. So, yeah, there were a few others, and I'm trying to remember some of them, but those origins are things we love to dig up. Those phrase and word origins are a lot of fun to look into.
Got a call now from Wayne in Pewaukee. Hi, Wayne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. You were talking about the origins of the microwave oven.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's another version of it.
Yes.
We had very powerful radar antennas for NORAD, and they started finding that birds would fly into the beam and die, or they'd drop. And they started examining them. And they realized there was an awful lot of energy in that. In fact, I saw a picture that was taken of one of these antennas where they just took a flash bulb and they threw it up in the air, and it went off just because it was ignited from the power of the beam. So I think the military was finding a lot of this before this guy melted his candy in his pocket.
Hmm. Yeah, I think they were. And I had actually, while we were sitting here talking about a few of the others, I found a bit in the book about this, talking about the magnetron tube, which is a technology that puts microwaves in a microwave, and it was first developed by the Brits as a component of radar in World War II. So kind of getting a little bit about what you were talking about, obviously a different military, but shortly after the war ended, it was a Raytheon engineer named Percy Spencer was working with the magnetron, and as I mentioned before, reached for a candy bar that he'd left in his pocket, which had oozed all over his pants, wondered why it had melted, and so he bought in a bag of corn kernels, laid them near the tube, and sure enough, he ended up making the first microwave popcorn. And so it was only a few years after that Raytheon was producing refrigerator-sized microwaves. I haven't actually seen a picture of this, but I'd love to. And by 1952, the microwave was well on its way to becoming a household fixture, despite this price tag of over $1,000, as we've seen with many other appliances. It's hard to imagine paying $1,000 for a microwave, and especially at that time. But those are the stories that we had found. But you're right. I mean, the militaries, various militaries, were looking into similar technology, years before this.
Well, Pearson, we could go on and on. We are talking about the origins of everything, but I'm grateful for the time you gave us this morning.
Oh, thank you so much. It was good being with you.
Thanks a lot. It was a really fun book to read and to talk about this morning. Will Pearson, co-founder and editor of Mental Floss magazine, which recently released the book In the Beginning, From Big Hair to the Big Bang. Mental Floss presents a mouthwatering guide to the origins of everything. Veronica Rickert with you today. I'm in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio in this Valentine's Day sort of edition of our winter pledge drive. And we've had a little scrambling behind the scenes this hour. We had a listener call during Joy's show who wanted to dedicate a love song to Kathleen. Joy was talking about love songs that set your heart aflutter this morning. And there was a listener from Chatfield who called and wanted to dedicate this one to Kathleen. As you probably know, Kathleen is very proud of her Irish heritage, and we just want to play this one for Kathleen on this Valentine's Day.
When Irish eyes are smiling, sure 'tis like a morn in spring. In the lilt of Irish laughter, you can hear the angels sing.
And speaking of Irish laughter, I'm hoping we'll be hearing Kathleen Dunn's Irish laughter very soon when she returns to the airwaves of Wisconsin Public Radio. Until that time, why not support the program that Kathleen has built here, that Kathleen conducts with such verve every day on Wisconsin Public Radio? Say thank you with your pledge at 1-800-383-9772. It's 1-800-383-9772 or pledge online, WPR.org. And I am joined in the studio this morning by Steve Paulson, executive producer of Wisconsin Public Radio's To the Best of Our Knowledge. Good morning, Steve.
Hi, Veronica.
Also with me, Rhonda Fanning. She is the producer for Kathleen Dunn's program, and she's been working behind the scenes setting up the shows all week and, of course, all year. Hi, Rhonda. Good to see you here.
Good morning.
And, Steve, speaking of Valentine's and all the good love song sort of things, tell us a little bit about the special offer we have this hour.
We have a very sweet deal, I have to say. For a pledge of $600, a chocolate extravaganza, all things chocolate. This will happen on Saturday, April 26th. Three of the premier chocolatiers in the area, Gail Ambrosius, David Bacco, and Marcus Candinas, will be coming into the radio station in Madison and talking about chocolate. Of course, also offering some of their chocolates for all to sample. And this will be a conversation about chocolate as you have never heard it before. It will also be a chance to take a behind-the-scenes look at how a radio show is put together. We'll be talking about To the Best of Our Knowledge in particular, and we'll be doing an interview with these three chocolatiers, and we'll show you how it's edited. We'll actually sort of project this on a screen, and so you'll see radio as it's being made like you've never seen it before. So that is all yours, that wonderful afternoon for a pledge of $600, or if you'd like to bring someone special with you, two tickets for $1,200.
1-800-383-9772. Steve, I was struck by your phrase, radio as you've never seen it before, which is interesting because, of course, we don't ever see radio.
Right.
We hear radio. So that's part of what makes this such an amazing event to go to, because you do actually get to see the sound waves up on the board and see how the music works in, because we do have to have something to look at as we're editing. And it is part of the magic that is radio. So that would be your pledge of $600. And, of course, when you pledge at $600 or $120, $50. We will be happy to send you out our member benefit card, which is something people are really enjoying. You get 2-for-1 entrees at over 200 restaurants, 2-for-1 admission at cultural attractions and bed and breakfasts and online stores. So lots of benefits to go along with that. And every time you use your member benefit card, you'll be reminded of your support for Wisconsin Public Radio, how you did a good thing, and how you have ownership in what you hear when you turn on the radio. This is a great hour to call Valentine's Day, and we're happy to hear from you and take your call at 1-800-383-9772.
And also this hour, Veronica, if you call in at that $120 level, you're also going to receive a copy of the book from Mental Floss Magazine. The editors of Mental Floss has compiled a ton of histories of the origins of just about everything, from Big Hair to the Big Bang, the mouth-watering guide to the origins of everything, and that's yours this hour for a pledge of $120. The editors of Mental Floss have been with Kathleen several times in the past. She's a big fan of the magazine. I think she's given a couple of subscriptions away this Christmas. And public radio is kind of like your Mental Floss. Learn something new every day that you tune in. So please call with your pledge this hour, 800-383-9772, or you can log on to our secure website at WPR.org. It just takes a few minutes.
And one thing that I love about public radio is that it really ranges from the serious to the playful. And I'm just thinking about the 2 hours that you've had on this morning, Veronica. I mean, everything from politics and the presidential campaign to talking about the origins of everything, including the microwave and, you know, all kinds of daily fixtures that we take for granted. But, you know, they're kind of amazing how they've transformed our lives. So that's what you get day in and day out on Wisconsin Public Radio. A wonderful reason for you to call in now to support this public radio station. You can do that by calling 800-383-9772. You can also pledge online at WPR.org.
Yeah, I think this book would be a fantastic resource to have in your house. I know that in my house, lots of times we'll just be talking idly and someone will say, hey, I wonder where, you know, the washing machine came from. I think about that often. I'm grateful for my appliances and I use them a lot. Or what about dolls? That's also in the book. Video games. Do you wonder where video games came from? Or aerobics, golf, the toaster, caffeinated beverages, spices, fondue, shoes. I mean, everything is in here and it's fascinating. And if you just kind of want to take a look at your daily life, the things you take for granted, and learn about them, this would be a great resource to have and just to flip through when you feel like you want to learn a little something. That's yours with a pledge of $120 along with the member benefit card. We'd send you that out as well at the $120 level. The right thing to do, though, is to support Wisconsin Public Radio because you believe in it, because you listen to it, and because you think the programs are great and you get a lot out of them. We hope to hear from you this morning once you decide to make your pledge at 1-800-383-9772.
Or you can log on to our secure website at WPR.org. And this book is very indicative of the type of things. And these 2 hours today are just kind of the daily things that Kathleen Dunn and Veronica Rueckert and Joy Cardine brings you. We can talk about foreign policy 1 hour and then turn around and the phones light up again with people wanting to know, you know, where the phrase the cat's pajamas come from. Every day on Wisconsin Public Radio, these we work hard to bring you these types of programs. So please call at that $120 level this hour. You will not only get a copy of the Mental Floss book that Will Pearson was just a guest for, but you'll also receive that membership card. And that number is 800-383-9772.
And when we talk about these kinds of things that we'll give you when you pledge in, whether it's the book from Mental Floss Magazine or the chocolate event, the chocolate extravaganza, these are thank yous to us. And, you know, you could go out and you could buy that book for less money. You could, you know, eat a lot of chocolate for $600. What you're really doing is you're supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. I mean, this is we have fun in the process by offering you books or exciting events. But really what this is about is celebrating Wisconsin Public Radio and supporting Wisconsin Public Radio because we need your support. And we only have a couple minutes left right now, so we need to hear the phones ring. You can also pledge online at WPR.org. The number to call is 800-383-9772. You know, I have to tell you, it feels great to pledge your support because you know you're doing the right thing. So the number to call, 800 800- 888-383-9772.
It does feel great, we know, because once people contribute, they keep on contributing. They make additional pledges. They renew their pledges. And you'll be able to experience that all firsthand when you become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio. Maybe consider becoming a member of Wisconsin Public Radio to support it for your children or your grandchildren, your nieces and nephews, for the next generation of listeners, because you want your children to be informed about the world, to know about the issues that matter in the world right now, to take an interest in learning. That Mental Floss book would be a great thing to give to a child. That's just the kind of information that kids love to have and could really get into. But if you'd like to have Wisconsin Public Radio there and healthy for the next generation, why not pledge for the young ones in your life at 1-800-383-9772. We take credit, debit card. You can become a sustaining partner with an ongoing monthly gift. You can pay all at once or monthly installments. Lots of ways to do it to become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio, but make that decision right now. And won't you call us at 800-383-9772?
And perhaps you are one of those young people that have listened for a long time. Maybe you grew up in a house that public radio is kind of always on in the background, and you've never pledged before. Well, maybe this is your turn. This is your year. Maybe this is your hour. So pick up the phone, 800-383-9772, and let us continue to bring you these types of programs each and every day.
1-800-383-9772 is the number to call. When you pledge at the $120 level, we will send you a thank you gift of the Mental Floss book along with the member benefit card. If you can afford a pledge of $600, we would welcome you to our chocolate event with, to the best of our knowledge, and some premier chocolatiers in the city of Madison. Hope you'll consider becoming a member of Wisconsin Public Radio at any level, and thank you for calling 1-800-383-9772. I'm Veronica Rickert, in for Kathleen Dunn, on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.